This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. If you have a child or a grandchild and read with them regularly, you know the impact of good literature. Not just the vocabulary and familiarity with the language structure, but the way that images and concepts are absorbed into their unconscious, shaping their understanding of the world, as well as their own self-image. An exhibition at the Miami University Art Museum features illustrations from children's literature entitled Telling a People's Story. Is a first major museum exhibition devoted to art found within the pages of African-American children's picture books. The exhibition features 33 artists with themes including African origins, slavery, the Harlem Renaissance, the Civil Rights Movement, and more. Original illustrations hang on the wall, but more importantly, from my point of view, the associated children's books are also available, and visitors are of all ages are invited to take time to read for themselves. Joining us to discuss the exhibition and the upcoming artist talks that will be offered are curator of exhibitions for the Miami University Art Museum, Jason Chaiman, and illustrator Aqua Holmes, I hope I got that somewhat right, who won the Coretta Scott King Illustrator Award for the 2017 book Out of Wonder, Poems Celebrating Poets, written by Kwame Alexander and Chris Calder-Lee and Majori Wentworth. Well, welcome to Cincinnati Edition. Aqua, did I come somewhat close to your name?
Yes, you ended up in a good place, Dan. Thank you for the effort.
I ended up in a good place. Very good. Jason, let's just start by asking why. Why this exhibit? What motivated the museum to sort of explore this topic and plunge in to this topic?
Well, I had the idea about 10 years ago to utilize children's picture books to tell identity stories. And we were trying to figure out what exact perspective to take because there are so many tangents. And we were looking at what's never been done. And we know that there's scholarship on the topic of African-American children's books, but nothing has ever been done for a major museum exhibit. So we started to look at all the potentials of educational and programming opportunities, and we realized there was also a great social justice component to bringing attention to the African-American experience and identity. And we were just absolutely blessed to be able to work on this project.
Aqua, the range of topics that are covered in this particular exhibit and also the range of styles, because there's so many different illustrators involved, must have – on the one hand, presented a challenge. On the other hand, really offered a fun opportunity to sort of pull all of this together and decide what ended up on the walls, what ended up, what books are featured. Must have been an interesting process.
Well, I wasn't really involved in the process of selecting the books. And my selection, which comes from Voice of Freedom, Fannie Lou Hamer, Spirit of the Civil Rights Movement, has a special relationship with the university, Miami University, because she actually came there in the 60s to do civil rights training for the Freedom Summer, which was an action to register blacks to vote in the Deep South. So Jason selected three pieces from that book to represent Fannie Lou Hamer and Miami University. I think it was Western University before that, but their role in making a space for this training and education to take place. So I was really honored because that was my first illustrated book to have that be the reason that I am among this constellation of fabulous illustrators that I've long admired.
From an illustrator's point of view, do you usually get involved in a project when someone has already written something, or do you initiate it as an illustrator and have someone else do the words, or do you do both? What's your way of working in terms of developing a children's book?
So let me just say, I'm kind of new to the field. I have two completed illustrated books. One we just mentioned, Voice of Freedom. The second one, Out of Wonder, which just won the Coretta Scott King Illustrators Award. Those are my first two books. And so I'm new to the industry, and I'm learning as I go. And one of the things I've learned is that the manuscript generally comes first. So the publishing companies purchase stories written by writers, and then they shop around for an illustrator. They look at what would be the best complement, the best style to complement this story. And in the case of my first book, I had my artwork up in an ice cream store, and someone from Candlewood Publishing happened to be in there, liked the style of my work, and called me. And that is how I, that was my doorway, my entry into the industry.
Which gets back to, you never know where somebody might discover you.
You never know. I tell artists this. I had spoken to an artist a while back, and he was like, I don't want to show my artwork in restaurants. I think that's degrading and this and that. And I said, well, you know, curators eat, art directors eat, everybody eats, so why not?
A good place where everything comes together.
Exactly.
So, Jason, what is the range here? We've talked about 33 different illustrators. Aqua is one of those illustrators. Mm-hmm. But what's the range in terms of how old some of the books are, how current? Obviously, some of them are very current. Sort of what's the range here that you were pulling from?
The earliest book we have is published in 1969. It was a book titled Stevie that was written and illustrated by John Steptoe. And it was very pivotal because it was the first book by an African-American to receive any critical acclaim. And it really helped set the stage for what came after with the development of the Coretta Scott King Award and the first African-American illustrated book to win the Caldecott Medal for illustration, which didn't come about until 1976. And most of the books come from that time, 69, 70s, or several from the 70s. A lot of the books are from the 90s and going all the way up until probably about 2015, 2016.
You know, the term curator, which is your title, mm-hmm. outside the museum profession, I'm not sure how many people actually know what that means. Mm-hmm. How would you describe your role here?
It's kind of a multifaceted exploration of a topic and all of the different stages of preparation from developing the idea for the proposal of an exhibition, doing all the research, looking at the selection of artworks, contextualizing, writing the object labels, text panels, gallery guides, and really kind of bringing it all together.
Right. So the impresario
brings
it all together. Aqua, as you worked on this, I don't know if you thought of yourself being an illustrator. Did you think of yourself particularly speaking to children? Or how did, before you sort of these two books of yours came about, how did you imagine your relationship to children?
Well, it's interesting. A lot of my work prior to my work in the publishing industry was about childhood. And perhaps that's one of the reasons that that particular editor was attracted to them. I grew up in a tightly knit black neighborhood here in Boston called Roxbury. And looking back, I just remember feeling very loved and cared for in my neighborhood, always having friends, always having encouraging words from the adults around me. And I wanted to bring those images to light in my work, and I still do that today. In the work on Voice of Freedom, I tried to be very sensitive to the fact that even though there were some very dark periods in Fannie Lou Hamer's story, that I was writing for children, and I wanted them to leave that story with a sense of hope and determination, not a sense of being overwhelmed by some of the problems of the world. And I tried to use my color palette and my composition to achieve that.
You know, it'd be very interesting as you spoke there. 2 weeks ago, I was in Memphis to visit the National Civil Rights Museum. And then Jackson, Mississippi, to visit the new Mississippi Civil Rights Museum. And in both situations, there were groups of students in those museums. And, you know, the museums are, you know, we always argue about how to target who our audience is in the museum world. But it would really be interesting to see what did they discover about Fannie Lou Hamer, who was spoken about, and that period of time from that museum experience versus sitting down and reading a book that's mm-hmm. targeted and illustrated for them. I think that would be just interesting to see the interplay of those two things.
Well, I think that interplay is the right way to go, because education isn't a singular direction. It's multifaceted and multi-pronged. So a museum visit in conjunction with a book, in conjunction with a lecture, in conjunction with what parents are talking about around the dinner table, those are all facets of how we receive our education. So that these illustrated children's books are one really, really important doorway, but certainly not the only one to tell a people's story. But to see it celebrated the way that Jason and Miami University put it together, when I walked in, I was just overwhelmed with the show. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing, and I hope that lots of people will come out to see it.
Aqua, you just mentioned before we took the break that the first time you saw the exhibit, you were really taken aback and affected by it. As an illustrator, what was it that caught your attention? I mean, because all of a sudden you were plunged into this sort of whole world of the illustration for children's books.
There are so many things. I could start with the fact that many of the artists' work, or many of the artists represented, were people that I had long admired. Mm. I have a son. I have a granddaughter, so I'm a person who buys children's books and reads them and collects them to some degree. So seeing the original work by Ashley Bryan, by Leo and Diane Dillon, and people like Jerry Pinkney, just to see their actual pencil marks and brush strokes and sort of the edges. You know, when a book is printed, it's cropped and everything is flat. So you don't really get to see a lot of the texture and detail that go into making these works of art. The other thing that I enjoyed was how there were so many levels to access the exhibition. So you have the historical context panels that you can read about, the way that the show is sectioned off to talk about slavery and civil rights, etc. And then the fact that you could pick up the books and read them, and that they were at child level. So a child and their parent, or children and their teachers, could come in and they can experience this exhibition at from their own entry point. I also loved the comfortable benches. You know, you could sort of imagine yourself curling up with one of these books in sort of the nooks and crannies of the exhibition. And then lastly, and that Jason, you can speak to this, are the colors of the wall, which I immediately felt this is an American story, because the walls are blue, red, and sort of an off-white. And I immediately felt like I knew the curator's mission there in making sure that we understood that this is an American story as well as an African-American story.
Jason, color of the walls, was that conscious, or it just happened to turn out that way?
I was very conscious. When I was originally planning, I thought I was just going to go with a deeper red, a nice burgundy color. But then all of a sudden, something just clicked for me when I was looking at placing certain pieces on certain walls and saying, that piece won't look so good on the red wall, so I need to choose a different color. And it just seemed to click, and all of a sudden it was, here's this American story. Let's go with the red, white, and blue.
Well, you know, I think of that as, you know, this being an American story, not just an African-American story, is related to here in Cincinnati, and it's traveled to a number of different places, the 30 Americans exhibit that the Cincinnati Art Museum did 2 years ago, mm-hmm. which on the title, their point was – 30 American artists, not 30 African American artists. They wanted to make that this is dealing with the core of the American experience, not not some side thing. One of the things about an exhibit like this is the opportunity to have school groups, have children. My understanding is that, Jason, that Douglas School here in Cincinnati, Cincinnati Public Schools, and it's in Walnut Hills, it is actually one of the oldest African-American identified schools in the region, has brought a lot, if not all, of their children up. Is that true?
That is. They actually came up in four different trips to bring the school up, and that was a collaboration between the Department of Teacher Education and the College of Education, Health, and Society at Miami University and the Frederick Douglass Elementary School. They had a relationship for several years, and Sheena Dunn at Frederick Douglass School was instrumental in helping to pull it all together and bring them up there. But then we also managed to bring in one of the other illustrators for the exhibit, Don Tate, and brought him down to the school. And so he was able to engage directly with the students.
Well, that's wonderful because, you know, the thing which we're calling these children's books, but children, different ages, their abilities, their interests, their sensitivities really change. I happen to have a 5-year-old grandchild who we read all the time. And but that's going to be very different than my 10-year-old grandchild, who reads on his own and has a whole different approach. So when you're bringing schools in, what do you do with them?
Well, we tailor the tours for them. So our curator of education, Cynthia Collins, will work with the teachers from the different schools and figure out the grade levels and help tailor to what they are studying in their curriculum. And we have our docent corps, the museum, which facilitates many of the tours and engaging directly with the children and asking them lots of questions, their own understandings, and sharing the historical perspective. So it's a great way of connecting the dots.
From an illustrator's point of view, and you hinted at this several minutes ago, Aqua, about in the Fannie Lou Hamer story, this whole civil rights movement has a lot of very difficult aspects to it, and how you treat that's important. The whole – all a lot of stories here, the story of slavery certainly.
Right.
How do you see that illustrators over the years in different situations have helped people come to grips with the reality, yet not in a way that destroys children?
Yeah. Well, I don't know that I'm an expert on that particular subject, but coming from a fine arts background, I feel like imagery allows people to talk about difficult subjects from their various viewpoints as they look at something together. And we start by just sort of describing what's going on in the piece and our impressions about it. So I think that it's a great jumping off point for parents and children, teachers and children, to get together and talk about real American history, you know, not just the ones that fill our hearts with pride, but also some of the ones that we maybe wish as a country we hadn't been involved in. I think a book, an illustrated book, is a great way to start those conversations and return to them time and time again as children develop their thinking and ideas. So I'm happy to be involved in books, historical narratives, especially about untold stories or stories that have not been told a lot. But I also recognize that children need to be children too. And they need books that make them laugh and fill them with joy, as well as information and history.
Yeah. Can't be too didactic. There has to be. It's the emotional connection that's really important. Jason, do you have one or two favorite books that, you know, as you went through this process, you've really become attached to as sort of total books, not just an individual illustration or not just an individual story?
I have, and one of them happens to be Akua's. And for me...
you didn't have to say that.
No, it absolutely is. You know, when we were developing the exhibit, early on, we were combing through hundreds and hundreds of books. And I came across this one because of a colleague working on the project. And she showed me Ikua's book. And I said...
Now, which book was this?
And this is The Visions of Freedom.
Okay.
The Fannie Lou Hamer.
Fannie Lou Hamer.
And I said... Right away, we have to have something from this book in the exhibition because of the connection with Miami University.
And Western College.
The Western College for Women. I mean, the people who came, the 800 volunteers who trained, were right there behind the museum. They may even be standing on the ground where the museum now is. So there's a lot of history there. And we just – it was a given. We had to have.
Yeah.
And I was absolutely – grateful to Akua when she said yes, that she would participate. But, you know, like Akua said, there are many stories that few people know about. You know, few people know the very first self-made female millionaire in the United States was an African-American named Madam C.J. Walker, and there's a book about her. Or there's a story that I love about Vivian Thomas from a book called Tiny Stitches. Here is a man who helped infants suffering from blue baby syndrome and many infants who were dying because of circulation problems. He was African-American. He developed the technique and the tools, but he was not able to perform the procedures because of segregation. And so few people knew about him. And it wasn't until more than 20 years after he pioneered this that he actually received any credit. And those are, to me, what opens up these opportunities for people to not just simply say all the woes of the African-American experience, but there are these amazing heroes that have come through.
You know, I don't know this individual book, but you referenced it. It's called – it's about Madam C.J. Walker. It's called Vision of Beauty, the story of Sarah Breedlove Walker. And it really just reading through the description that you sent, it's reminded me of the little video that came out last year called The Talk that was done by Procter & Gamble. And it's about the talk that African-American parents have to have with their children. And the opening scene is a mother combing the hair of her daughter and saying the daughter has told her that someone said that she was a pretty black girl. And then the closing scene is the mother saying, no, you are a pretty girl. And it seemed to me that the whole question of beauty and how one understands that, there was just – it just hit me as I looked through this. Akua, do you have a book that you've discovered in all of this?
No particular book, but just a tremendous pride of the work that black illustrators do. I think we've been sort of a hidden group until a show like this can come out and really show the process and technique and some of the thinking that goes behind some of the work.
Okay. Thank you very much. I have run out of time. This exhibit is at Miami University and open through June 30th. So thank you very much for being with us today. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.